and online since 1984. Community radio for Arkansas and beyond. 88.3 KABF Little Rock.
This is Wade's World, and we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
Everywhere you go, you always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, you always take the weather. Everywhere you go, you always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, you always take the weather.
This is Wade Rathke. It's Wade's World. That means we're on 9 o'clock to 9:30, broadcasting from KABF, FM 88.3, the voice of the people from Little Rock, Arkansas. We're live streaming at www.kabf.org, and by Monday there'll be a podcast if you missed any of this show. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Nancy Nusser, the media director of Public Citizen in Texas. And we're going to be talking about a lot of issues that have to do with oil, coal, and energy efficiency. Nancy, welcome to Wade's World.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure. So we've been talking about coal off and on for the last couple of months. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the attempts to still build a coal export facility on a river in Louisiana. And most of what we read, coal is becoming less popular. But in Texas, y'all are still having to lead the fight and help organize the fight against more building of coal-powered plants, aren't you?
Well, what we're trying to do now in Texas is point out that renewables, wind and solar power, really become less expensive than coal-fired power. Once you factor in the upgrades that those plants are going to have to undergo in order to comply with the EPA's big climate initiative that they announced last year. So coal-fired power, because of the efforts globally and in the United States to reduce climate change. You know, the coal-fired power plants create more CO2 than virtually any other energy source. And because they have to reduce that in order to help us all reduce climate change, the cost of coal-fired power, which used to be inexpensive, becomes very expensive. And so what we're trying to point out is that, you know, renewables, compared to that, renewables and like wind and solar, especially in Texas, because we have so many wind and solar resources, become cheaper than coal-fired power. And you can see the financial world kind of waking up to that, as you see, you know, in the United States, more and more investment in renewables. You see big corporations like Citibank declaring that, you know, we're now in the age of renewable energy. And this is because, you know, the renewables, especially, again, especially in states that have lots of sun and wind, like Texas, become really viable as a way of producing clean energy that's not going to contribute to climate change.
And this is obviously part of what President Obama announced not long after the midterm elections, that the EPA, with his support, was going to be proposing these new rules. And it's surprising. Now, Public Citizen, we think of that as the old Ralph Nader organization, but it's more diverse in many ways than that in Texas. This has been a major priority for you in Texas, hasn't it, Nancy?
Yes, you know, we're consumer advocacy and based out of Washington, D.C., and we do, you know, we're involved in many, many different kinds of consumer advocacy issues. But in Texas, we have focused largely on energy and environmental issues, energy policy and environmental issues. And, you know, they are, you know, we fought the, we fought coal-fired power plants, tried to either shut them down or get them to clean up for years and years in Texas. And, you know, most recently we've been trying to point out and expose the fact that, you know, TXU, EFH, the big EFH conglomerate that includes Luminant Energy and TXU, which does coal-fired power plants and also strip mining, never really built enough actual cash into its, never really had enough actual cash in reserve to be able to clean up the strip after the strip mining that it does all over Texas. And this has become a big issue because, of course, EFH is entered into bankruptcy, which means last year, which means that, you know, then what happens is that Texas is on the hook for cleaning up all these strip mines all over the state.
And this is one of those terrible, terrible situations when we talk about TXU, where, you know, there's no pleasure that comes with being able to say we told you so. Many of us, and certainly Texas Acorn was part of this fight, opposed the conglomeration and private equity moves on consolidating these energy companies back when they were first proposed. And it was controversial, as you, I'm sure you know, Nancy, because a number of environmental groups were solicited by one of the principals, Bondurant, of TPG, that was part of the Texas, the TWU merger, about how it was going to be a great environmental program. They were going to reduce the number of coal-fired plants to a very small number where they had proposed, I forget, 6 or 8 or something crazy. And it never made sense. The money was never there, and the Railroad Commission didn't listen, boom, boom. And what happens now? A huge bankruptcy, and it's a long way from over, isn't it, Nancy?
Yes, and that's, again, it's what we still have 22 coal-fired power plants in Texas, and some of the most polluting of those are the ones that are in around the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and those are ones that are owned by Luminant, which is in turn owned by EFH, and they contribute enormously to the pollution, the heavy pollution in Dallas, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the pollution that makes the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you know, a real problem in terms of compliance with federal standards, but also in terms of just health impacts. I mean, those coal-fired power plants are contribute greatly to the pollution that, you know, has results in Dallas with, you know, high asthma rates and high respiratory and cardiac compounds respiratory and cardiac disease as well.
And surprisingly, you know, as bad as it is, Texas only gets about a third of its power from coal generation, and states like West Virginia, Kentucky are up there in the 75, 85, 90% range, and we get to read about Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell trying to lobby other states like Texas that they need to push back against these new federal rules that would actually let us live longer and breathe better. Crazy, huh, Nancy?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, let's talk about, we've been on this issue for a million years, the fact that getting the coal, they don't do a lot of coal mining in Texas. That means a lot of it's coming from the Fort Union coal deposits in the Powder River Basin, Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota. How's it getting down to Texas, and is that causing problems too, Nancy?
Yes, well, we have, it comes down to Texas through on Union Pacific, primarily Union Pacific and BNSF rail lines, and they go through, you know, they come down through Texas, come down to the, you know, the central and western part of the United States, and then they come through Dallas, Fort Worth area, around through parts of rural Texas, and then down into Houston. And with that, we're really focusing right now on oil train issues because, you know, those rail lines are also shipping back in oil, which is the highly explosive oil that, you know, has been involved in these, you know, catastrophic derailments all over the United States.
And this is the Canadian oil we're talking about, right?
It's actually North Dakota.
Okay, North Dakota as well. Mm-hmm. Because we had a big spill in Mayflower, Arkansas, here a couple of years back. just along the lines of what you're talking about.
Yeah, and they are catastrophic. I mean, anybody who's been on YouTube or looking at the newspaper, online newspapers and so forth, has seen these catastrophic explosions where there are huge fireballs that go into the air, and it's the nature of derailments with Bakken oil, which is highly explosive. In Texas, we also have this. It's also highly explosive, and it's the Eagle Ford and Permian Shale, Permian Basin oil that goes through our cities on these trains. And so that is really a focus, because it's just an enormously risky endeavor to be moving those trains through highly populated areas. I mean, I think that even the Department of Transportation last summer issued a report that said there were likely to be 10 derailments of oil and ethanol trains annually because of increased transportation of oil, by rail, and that there would be something like $4 billion in damages, and hundreds would be killed if they happened in urban areas. And in Houston, these trains with really hazardous chemicals are passing literally within feet of people's houses in the east side, for example, in the east side of Houston, where a lot of those train lines go through in order to get down to refineries at the southern part of Houston. So what we're trying to do is get those trains rerouted around densely populated areas. This is something that's been called for in Philadelphia and other cities. Washington, D.C. even also asked for rerouting of hazardous chemical trains, including Bakken oil trains, around populated areas. It's something that started actually right after 9/11, when there was concern about terrorist attacks on trains, and now it's coming to the fore again with these exploding, bomb trains, essentially, of carrying the highly flammable oil.
Bomb trains, that sort of says it all, and inevitably these are going through lower-income, working people's, frequently minority neighborhoods, too, when you talk to the cities and you talk about East Houston, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with those wards in the city of Houston. Now, they talk about increasing the strength of the tank cars on oil, but I haven't heard much about additional protections on coal trains. I mean, I'm sure you're more on top of that, but I'm also not sure how quickly they can do it, which makes your point about financial and human damage even more current, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there is right now this federal legislation that's been introduced to require that the thicker-shelled tank cars be used, the ones that are less vulnerable to explosion than the old, they're called DOT 111 cars. And they're talking about phasing that in over years. But in the meantime, I mean, what communities like Houston, again, in Houston, these trains are passing right through people's backyards, right within a few feet of basketball courts and parks and community centers. What we can ask for to get right now, what we could get right now, is more information from the railroads. And this is something that, the public and any elected officials can pressure the railroads for. And it's the kind of information that would help people protect themselves. It's information, for example, like the railroads' worst-case scenarios, in which they estimate for themselves, what the costs of a, catastrophic oil train derailment in an urban area would be. That would give us a sense of, how badly different, our own neighborhoods or whatever would be affected in the event of an oil train derailment. Another one that information that we really need to have is the railroads, what they have in catastrophic insurance, for example. We need to find out, do they have enough insurance to pay for an oil train derailment in an urban area or in an environmentally sensitive area. So, in the interim, while we're trying to get safer rail cars, while we're trying to get, these hazardous chemical trains rerouted around densely populated areas, we can get more information that would help people protect themselves, certainly help the first responders who have to be right out there in front in the event of a derailment, protect themselves. We could get that information right away.
We're talking to Nancy Nusser, who is the media coordinator for Public Citizen in Texas that has been concentrating on oil and coal issues. And she's scaring the daylights out of a lot of us because when you talk about getting information from railroads, I live about three blocks from the tracks. that's a tough issue. These are big companies that don't really believe they have to answer to many people. Are y'all getting much help from the state government on this kind of demand?
No, not really. But I think that, the railroads are famously, invulnerable or resistant to pressure from anybody. But I think that if there's any time when we could get some concessions, it would be now, because the oil train derailment issue has become such a national, there's been such a national focus on it. And in fact, right now, there's going to be an announcement about a U.S.-Canadian agreement to get the thicker shell cars on trains that are crossing that border, and there's federal legislation that's been introduced, and I think those are firsts, actually. So there's no better time than now to try to pressure for some of the concessions, some of the information, and at the minimum information about what we're facing and, the danger that we're in from oil trains then right now because of the national pressure. Yes, they are resistant, but they also have not, they're also inflicting a risk upon the public. This is a new risk being inflicted on the public because as of several years ago, there was virtually, this shipment of oil by rail is a very new phenomenon. It's only happened in the last several years with the oil production boom that's gone on in the United States. So, this is a new risk that the railroads are putting the public in. And as a result, now is the time that we need to fight back on this.
That sounds right. And talking about new risk, are there any current proposals in Texas for more construction of coal-fired plants, or is that pretty much consensus now that that's a crazy thing to do and let's take it off the board?
No, there are no more. We still have 22 coal-fired units operating at different sort of coal-fired complexes throughout the state, but there are no proposals for new terminals, right, for new coal-fired power plants right now.
Well, that's good to hear, because I could have sworn I read not long ago in one of those financial journals talking about this TXU mess that they still had plans in the future to potentially build more coal. And, God, to get them out of bankruptcy or try to straighten that company out, that should be a condition, is that they start, looking more at renewables, for goodness sakes. Is the law friendly to renewables in Texas?
We're having a big fight there, too. I mean, we just had a...
Look, we're in Arkansas, Louisiana, places. We're seeing to be fighting this everywhere. But, we always hope, though. So what's it look like in Texas? I know your legislature's still in session, isn't it?
Yeah, we just had a bill in the legislature that we tried, Public Citizen, worked with a lot of other environmental groups to try to defeat, and it looks like it's happily been tabled for the time being. And that was a bill that would repeal the Renewable Portfolio Standard, which is it would repeal a program called the Renew RPS, Renewable Portfolio Standard, and it requires that utilities get a certain amount of their energy from renewables, and that RPS, that program, was responsible for what's been an incredible boom in wind energy in West Texas. I mean, we have so many windmills out in West Texas, and it's been a boost for the It's been a huge boon for the economy as well. It's created new jobs. It's created brought in new tax revenues, and it's really been a wonderful development out in West Texas. And in West Texas, people are very, very pro wind energy, and yet this
and that's oil country too. So that's important.
Yeah. And this bill would have turned back the program that made all of that happen. So. We fought very hard against it. We got some media releases out. We got some coverage of it in a lot of the media around the state. We also got a lot of people, including economic board directors, calling in and writing to the legislature. And for the time being, at least, it looks like it's been tabled. In other words, it doesn't look like it's going to come up. So we're hopeful about that. And I think the reason that has worked is because I think to many people, it just makes common sense that there is no point in pulling back a program or cutting back on a program that's done so much for the state in terms of not only clean energy, but in terms of, you know, the economics of the state as well.
Well, and, you know, if you ever run into people from Lubbock, besides talking about Buddy Holly, what you hear about is the wind, and the wind never stops out there. So making that into something that provides energy just, you know, just makes sense. But solar, too, must be, you'd think that would be growing hugely in Texas as well. Is that the case or no?
Yes, it is. I mean, we've had great advances in you know, great increases in the use of solar. It hasn't grown at the rate, quite the rate that wind has, but we really think that we're about to, you know, head off. We're about it to go into a big increase in, or a boom in solar, like as we have with wind in the past. One of the issues with solar is it's more, much of the solar is people are installing it individually on their homes, as opposed to, you know, you can do
sure.
solar for, you know, large-scale solar, but in a lot of cases, it's people are installing it individually on their homes, and that has just taken a little bit longer to get off the ground.
Is there an incentive program in Texas that encourages that, or is it just pretty much people doing the right thing or hoping for the best, or what?
Well, again, this RPS that I was talking
okay.
about, it applied to not only wind but also to solar. So that was an incentive for the utility-scale solar to get power from solar. And in some cases, what they're doing is they're buying that from individuals who have put solar power on their houses, and they are selling the excess or the surplus power that they have back to the utilities. So that is an incentive.
Now, obviously, Texas is, you know, famous worldwide as oil country. How in the world are oil companies allies in the fight against coal, or it's just pretty much whatever it takes?
Well, we do have a lot of pushback from the oil and gas industry in Texas, and you know, it's a hard slog because of that. I mean, but by the same token, a lot of energy companies now that are involved in oil are also getting increasingly involved in renewables. But it is a hard slog in Texas because of the huge interest in the huge interest in oil and gas revenues.
Well, I've got to wonder, since most of it in Texas is regulated by the Texas Railroad Commission, which both looks after railroads and also looks after oil companies, that must make it dicey when you're talking about how to regulate oil trains, too, huh?
Well, you know, and the oil trains are, you know, there's very little that state government can do about the railroads. So what, you know, what we have to try to do is on the one hand, we can get things like a resolution to reroute oil trains, but we also have to try to feed into the federal movement right now that is really growing. I mean, there are oil by rail organizations, environmental groups getting involved in that all over the United States because it's been such a big issue. So part of the issue is to try to take this, you know, feed into the federal pressure, because it is difficult for, you know, states. There are just very few regulatory. There's very few agencies that actually have any power over the railroads. I mean, one other.
Although it almost sounded earlier like you might be ready to advocate for environmental impact statements on some of these oil trains and coal trains, huh?
Well, one thing that we are trying to do is we're supporting communities in just north of, it's actually just north of Houston, north and west of Houston in the Hearn-Mumford area, that are trying to stop a proposed Union Pacific rail yard, switch yard. And this is a massive project. It would be for a 4-mile-long switch yard. This would be built to accommodate increased oil and gas volumes, as well as some increased coal for export. And it's being built to accommodate, you know, just what we're expecting to be like a doubling of train traffic in Houston, you know, once the Panama Canal is expanded. In any event, this is a massive switch yard that's being planned for a 4-mile stretch right in the middle of of what is Texas's best farmland. Basically, it's Texas's. It is an area that is unusually fertile, in between the Brazos and the Little Brazos River, and it's there on a floodplain. It's over several aquifers, and it just is a terrible place to put a massive rail yard. So we're working with the communities there that have been trying to stop that, because what's going to happen is they're being pressured to sell farmland that's been in their families for a century. And then even they're concerned about, once it's built, about damage, runoff and damage to other farms around the area, and damage to the, again, the Brazos River, which is within a mile of the site for this. So we are trying to fight that, and it's a difficult and uphill battle, because there are so few agencies that have leverage over the rail yards, over the railroads.
And gee, when you mention aquifer issues, that just usually you say aquifer and you get some support in Texas. Boy, those issues around San Antonio and everywhere else around aquifers have been huge. And we'll just have to hope you can keep us up to date with that fight. So Public Citizen seems very active. How do people keep up with these kind of campaigns, if there's any way they can be helpful, Nancy?
Well, we have a couple of websites. We have our national website, the Public Citizen website out of Washington. We have
Why don't you give people that website? What is that?
www.publiccitizen.org.
Can't be easier than that. www.publiccitizen.org. And then do they just hit Texas, or?
No, then we have Texas Vox, which is and it's TexasVox.org. It is the Public Citizens Texas website, and that is focused, basically it's focused on our Texas work, which includes everything from the everything from the Union Pacific Rail Yard to the Houston Oil Trains to a lot of renewable and work promoting renewables.
Vox, voice in Latin. And that looked like it was a regular newsletter, or is that just a website?
It's a website.
Okay. So Texas, it's just www.texasvox.org?
.org.
Excellent. And you were in the middle of saying some other way people could find out about your work?
It's Texas. I'm just checking it to make sure I've got all the dots in the right place.
Yeah, no, that's the problem with the Internet, right?
Yeah, Texas Vox, no punctuation, just lowercase, no periods or anything, .org. And that gets you to, it's basically the voice of Public Citizen in Texas, and it has all of our Texas-centric issues. And then I also do media coordination for the Clean Gulf Commerce Coalition, which is a coalition of organizations, Public Citizen, Sierra Club, Gulf Restoration Network in Louisiana, Louisiana Environmental Action Network, Air Alliance Houston, which is focused on monitoring air pollution in Houston. And we're working together on coal issues and oil issues as well. Beginning to focus on the oil issues in the Gulf Coast region, and that is cleangulfcommerce.org. Actually, cleangulfcommercecoalition.org.
Well, it sounds like it's easy to find out what's going on, and from talking to Nancy Nusser, the media coordinator for Public Citizen, and she's based, as she said, in Texas, I think Austin, and works all over Texas, but also a little bit in the Gulf Coast and those issues. It sounds like we need to keep up with this fight, don't we, Nancy?
Yes, we really need, we need people to talk about these issues, to write to their elected officials about these issues. We need volunteers, we need activists. Yeah, it's a big fight.
Thank you so much, Nancy. We're here with Wade's World every Friday. We'll be on next Friday. We'll probably be talking about India, but we may be talking about evangelicals. It just depends on what's breaking the fastest. Lots of things are happening. We're on KABF 88.3 FM, 100,000 watts of people power. The Voice of the People. You can catch this broadcast on a podcast later. We'll see you next Friday. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bonjour à tous. Welcome to